It's the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome back. It's the second hour of Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. And, you know, one of the benefits of this program is that I get to find experts in areas that I'm not so smart in. And what do I mean by that? Well, I am not a parent. So often when people will ask me questions about how do I talk to my kid about money, I can give an answer that I think is rational, but often people will say to me, but you're not a parent. You don't really get it. So for example, when Mark and I were like, just say no to your kid and that college loan, just forget it. Well, neither of us is parents. Ergo, we may not quite have the right tone. Also, we don't know all of the research. That's why we get experts. And we have an expert here today. And her name is Beth Kobliner. And she is the author of the new book, How to Make Your Kid a Money Genius. Beth is a longtime writer, advocate. She's also a longtime parent. So, Beth, you're the perfect person to give all of the tough questions your answers, because you know what happens when those big eyes look back at you, and you know what it feels like to be a parent, and I don't. So welcome back to the show, Beth.
It is so great to be here, Jill. I love talking to you.
Yeah, I know. We have a love affair. It's a beautiful thing.
I really do love talking to you.
It's too much fun. It's not fair. Where are you now? You're on your big book tour.
I'm in Chicago.
How's that going?
It is amazing. I mean, last night I spoke at this Family Action Network, and it was, you know, a couple hundred parents asking me, you know, really lobbing questions about money and their kids and kids buying apps on their phones and the parents not realizing it. It's really amazing. So it's great. It's great. It's great to hear questions, and it's great to be able to offer information. I think it's one of those topics people are hungry about, but they don't really know how to talk about it, and they don't know where to turn.
So when you have an event like that, and in your, you know, you're basically an expert in this ever since you became essentially a Washington, D.C. spokesperson. No, I'm just kidding. You were really part of, and when I say part of, the main force behind a presidential initiative to help parents talk to their kids about money. So why don't you tell everyone a little bit about that so they, sure, they know you got some street cred, babe.
Yeah. So I was on the President's Advisory Council, President Obama, Advisory Council on Financial Capability. And basically what I did was create a infographic, is what they technically call it. It's just information that looks really cool, and it was on a website that talks to parents about what your kids need to know at various ages, whether they're 3 to 5, because research shows that by age 3, kids understand money basics, everything from they understand needs versus wants, and they understand the importance of value, that money has value. So 3 to 5, 6 to 10, 11 to 12, 13 to 15, and so on, up through early adults. And we put that out there, and it went viral. And Jill, I have never done anything that's gone viral, because it was a, you know, personal finance thing for kids and parents, and yet on Pinterest, moms were pinning it, and they were sharing it on Facebook, and it was kind of a really interesting phenomenon. And we got to present it to the president, and he has 2 daughters, so he wanted to take a look. And, you know, it really started, I think, an awareness and a movement. And since I have 3 kids, 21, 18, and 13, I've been hearing about this for years from the playground, classrooms, college campuses. How do I answer my kids' questions? And how do I get them to understand the value of a dollar?
And in your experience going through the process of creating that website, Money As You Grow, Money As You Grow still exists, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
What happened was it was adopted to the Consumer Financial Protection, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the Elizabeth Warren created bureau, has adopted it. And it's now on their website, and they've incorporated it as their key. Now their website's called Money As You Grow, that section of it, to teach children about money. And they have a book section that can give you books that are related to money. You know, my husband Googled my book, and it said, like, second book bought as much, you know, when they buy my book, is The Little Red Hen. Do you remember that story that the little hen would keep working and working and all the other animals would take, oh, I don't want to help you sow the wheat or tend the wheat or grind the wheat or bake the bread, but I want to eat it. And then and The Little Red Hen was that super hardworking one. I reference that in my book, in Money, Make Your Kid a Money Genius, and I think, you know, parents want to know how you can talk to little kids even in storytelling time. Talking about these values of waiting, delaying gratification, saving for something you want.
When you were going through the process, and we're going to get to your book also, but like as you were creating Money As You Grow and you were doing your research, you know, you're a longtime personal finance journalist. Like you've been immersed in this. What was surprising to you? What did you find out that you were like, oh my gosh, I didn't know blank. What was that?
Yeah, well, I think one of the studies that came out while I was doing this was that they said Cambridge University, so we know it was a, you know, Tony place. Cambridge University did a survey of all the surveys out there, and they found that by age 7, kids are pretty much set with many of their money habits.
What? Wait a second. Yeah. Stop. Seven? So I've got 7 years. That's it.
Well, you can still do much, much, much more after that, and I do get a little reaction from parents if their kids are 8 and up, but it's more the idea that this is such a good time. That window between 3 and 7, kids are particularly malleable and particularly eager to sort of pick up both what you're doing and you're modeling for them as a parent, but also what you're talking to them about and teaching them about. And of course, 8, 9, 10, and the middle school years, I find kids are fascinated by money and they actually want to know some of the inside tricks or even being smart consumers. What should they look out for? So kids are still interested. And of course, as they go through high school, they want money, and college, they're desperate for money, but you know, that's the time when they have the least of it. So I think that all those points are entry points, but I think I was most surprised by learning that it starts that early, and those are important windows to focus on, those early years between 3 and 7.
It's so daunting. Like now, I want to tell you, let me be 100% crystal clear, gang. It is times like this when I'm so grateful that I have dogs, because I think that, you know, if I did a dog's, right, is it a dog's 1 year is 7 years. So now I don't have to worry about having the conversation about money or sex or drugs with them. And so for you parents out there, for you grandparents, we are going to be talking this hour with Beth Kobliner. She is the author of How to Make Your Kid a Money Genius. And she's telling you, you got to start early. So we're going to go through all the phases and what you need to know. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back with Beth Kobliner.
Doesn't matter if you're 25 or 65, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Back to Jill on Money.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. And let me tell you, there's nothing more mysterious than how to have an honest-to-goodness conversation about money with your children. Thankfully, I have the expert, Beth Kobliner. Can I say award-winning? I think you've won an award or two, right? Like journalist?
Yeah.
Award. Let me do this. Award-winning personal financial journalist, presidential advisory council member, author of How to Make Your Kid a Money Genius. Is there anything else we should put in there? That's like, what's not in your resume?
Titled, how to make your kid a money genius, even if you're not.
Even if you're not.
I know a lot of your listeners are so smart, and they're really interested, and they've learned so much from you and in their lives and their careers. But for people who are a little intimidated, it kind of goes through the basics. But I do find it's funny. Even people who are very, very smart about money, they often don't know how to talk about it with their kids.
Absolutely. Like, I know how to have sex. I don't know if I want to actually talk about sex with my kids. How about
there
that?
You go. And yet we do.
Mark likes that line particularly. Also, I just want to say that you may be one of Mark's favorite guests because
he was
so funny. He was just like, she's so cool. Avenue C, because you know why? Because we had that whole conversation. All right, everyone listening, this is a little inside baseball, but Beth was actually also on our podcast, and she made a funny reference to Alphabet City, which showed how old she and I are, except Mark is younger than us, and that was a horrifying moment for us, wasn't it?
Right. Well, I was like, well, you know, if your kids are going to live in Alphabet City, because in our day, that was, you know, a little...
Unsafe.
Unsafe.
Yeah.
And so Mark emailed me. He's like, I live on Avenue C. And I'm like, whoops. Sorry.
Yeah, right. Sorry. That's hip now. Okay. So Beth Koebleiner, you have now said to us that basically you're screwed if you don't talk to your kids by age 7. No, you're not. But that really a lot of habits and mentally messaging has really been taking place in all those formative years. So what is it that when your kids are young, that you should be talking about, like, at 3 years old?
Right. So you talk about, we have money that we will give you, and this is an allowance, and that money is to be used for your little extras. So if it's a boy who keeps wanting more and more Pokemon or more and more Lego sets, or girl who wants more and more Lego sets or more and more Pokemon, you have to talk to them about, you got something for your birthday, and you got something for Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or whatever it was. Now you're going to have to wait and save up that money for something you really want. And then you could talk about opportunity costs. Okay, you don't have to call it that. But you know how every day you say to your kid, you always want a little treat after school, and it costs a dollar, a little snack. What if we took that dollar, and instead of buying something, a candy or a treat, why don't we put it in that jar we have in your room? And maybe we'll have three jars. You've heard that one. A third, a third, a third. A
right.
third of your money for savings, a third of your money for spending, and a third of your money for giving. And that concrete example really has a very strong impact on kids. And maybe you want to match that money if they have a goal that they really are working toward. And maybe as kids get a little older, you start talking about the beauty and the magic of compound interest.
Mm.
You say, you know what? If you're 10 and you put away a quarter every day until you're stopping working, just a quarter every day, and you invested that money, you'd have $50,000 by the time you're ready to stop working.
And you have these stats in the book also, because
yes.
A lot of people are like, I don't know how to figure that out. So
right.
So you've got these examples in your book, How to Make Your Kid a Money Genius, Even If You're Not. And so what is important? What is the kid hearing in that moment, do you think?
The kid is hearing, I want that, I want that, I want that. Oh, wait a second. Mommy just told me I could get that. I just have to not get, you know, Fritos every day after school or whatever. And I'll put that money here and I have to wait for it. And man, by the time they go to the store and have their money with them and are so excited, and of course they end up buying something else because they see something else, but that feeling of pride and of making a choice or deciding not to buy that thing right now, it is so empowering. And I do believe it lasts. Doing that a few times is such positive reinforcement and lasts for a very, very long time. I think the other big thing is opening a bank account.
Mm.
People, do you remember opening your passbook savings?
Sure do.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know what we did? We went to this woman, and her name was Barbara, and my sister and I used to call her Barbara Bank. And I just want to tell you the funniest thing, that seriously, like, the bank changed hands 400 times, but after my father died, Barbara Bank paid a Shiva call, and we're like, and we literally hugged her and said, oh my God, it's Barbara Bank.
Oh.
But that's the kind of relationships we had with our bankers.
Wow. Wow. That is so brilliant of your father. Because first of all, nowadays, of course, it's harder to get to know your banker or the person who's sitting in the branch of your bank. But with all three kids, I did sort of go in ahead of time and just lay the groundwork, because you don't want somebody to be like, and don't respond to your children as they hand off their money, their precious life savings. But I did that with all three, and it was so amazing to them. My middle one got a little freaked out because he's like, wait, I just gave them all my money and they gave me a piece of paper. Now what?
By the way, I love that middle child. That now 18-year-old is probably the one who has the most money, the cynic of the three.
For sure.
Right.
And but it was interesting to then explain a little bit about where it goes. And I even sort of said, look behind there. And they let us hold them up to see the vault, just to get a feel for that there's some money that's being protected there. But those lessons, people don't do that anymore because we're all busy, understandably. We're all working. And it's all online. We're banking online. We're buying online. We're swiping our phones. We're swiping our cards. And my favorite story in the book is a mom who went with her kid to Target, and she had to buy juice boxes, like a ton of juice boxes. And she brought out a $20 bill, and her kid said, Mommy, don't use money. Just use your card. Why would you use money? Why would you pay for it? And that idea that kids don't get, that cards are money, I think is why we should be using cash with our kids basically through high school.
Interesting. So, I mean, just a couple minutes before the break, but I'm also wondering, I think that you say this in the book, but I don't know whether this makes a difference based on the age. If you are a money screw up, because you say, look, this is a book to make your kid a money genius if you're not, but let's say that you are doing bad stuff and mm-hmm. your kid is seeing that. Mm-hmm. That impacts that kid still as early as age three? In other words, if your kid sees you and your husband or your wife having a big money fight, that can impact him or her, right?
Yeah, that's one of that was another sort of surprise, because I guess you'd think, fighting in front of kids about anything, is not ideal, although it's good for kids to see parents fight a little bit and make up. But if you're having serious money fights, we do know that kids in those situations, or studies have showed that they have more trouble handling their money as they get older because they see it as such a source of conflict.
That's so interesting to me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And to keep it behind closed doors and tell your kids, we'll get back to you. We're going to talk about it first.
And so no fighting about money. It's so funny because, I just did a segment on TV about love and money. And one of the things that I always just absolutely, Mark hates that segment because he can't stand it. Meanwhile, he's, by the way, FYI, Mark's about to buy an apartment with his girlfriend and he's having a little apoplectic nervous breakdown about it.
On Avenue A?
Not on Avenue A, but close by. Right near where Lucky Chang's is. But I don't know if is that still open, Mark? I don't know if it is. But anyway. So what I want to know is that, as a couple, is it more important that you sort of get on the same page and give this messaging to your kids and both, you're both consistently doing the same thing? Do you have to have a conversation with one another before you start having these conversations with the kids? Should we get you guys on the same page? Let's talk about that with Beth Koblinder when we come back. You're listening to Jill on Money. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back.
Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Want to get in touch? Call or email any day, anytime. 855-411-JILL or AskJill@JillOnMoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I'm Jill Schlesinger, and we are so delighted because we're talking to my friend Beth Koblinder, award-winning financial journalist, author, How to Make Your Kid a Money Genius, Even If You're Not. Member of Presidential Advisory Council, creator of moneyasyougrow.org. What is not on your resume that we should be saying?
Oh, Jill.
What should we say? Are you a good cook also? Because I really hate you right
terrible.
Now.
I don't know how to cook. I burn toast, literally.
Stop it. You can't make a chicken soup? Your mother didn't teach you how to make a chicken soup?
No, she didn't.
My mother hated cooking, but we both know. My sister and I do know how to make chicken soup. It's about the only thing we can make.
Maybe you'll show me one day.
Anytime. Okay, because you tell us all these things about, you know, what we need to know. So before we went to the break, we're talking about how to talk to your kids about money. And one of the things I asked was, is it important for you and your spouse to kind of get on the same page about doing this or not?
The answer is yes. I mean, researchers have found that college kids whose parents actually regularly fight about money when the kids are younger were nearly 3 times more likely to owe $500 or more on their credit card.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Than kids whose parents who don't fight, which is kind of amazing. And of course, you and your spouse or your partner aren't going to always see eye to eye on money issues, but it's so important to shield your kids from those huge, you know, disagreements. And it's also another good example of how you get your kids to wait. Kids like, I want to go with my friends to this concert. Tell me now. You could say, you know what? I'm going to talk to daddy or mommy or whoever, and we're going to talk it through. And then we'll come back for you. You know, we're having a time out as parents, and we're going to tell you what we both think. That united front, my dad always said that, as parents, you know, always have a united front.
Mm-hmm.
And it's particularly important, you know, if parents are divorced and there are lots of tensions, you know, telling your son, oh, well, the reason you can't play on the, you know, soccer league is because dad wouldn't see.
Daddy will not let you play ice hockey.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. I hear that all the time. And the idea of, you know, putting aside your own baggage, your own, and talking offline with your spouse, the two of you face to face, is so important.
You know, it's so interesting because, you know, we're talking so much about money and issues around finances. And I think that, you know, look, I get that many people grew up in households where money was taboo. And it was so it's hard for them to talk about money. So how do you help them? You know, people might be listening and saying, you know, this doesn't come naturally to me. So what is it that you can tell them to help coach them along? And by the way, you've also said to me in the past that this is not this happens to people who have no money, some money, and lots of money. So all parents.
Yeah, I think people who have a good amount of money think, I don't want my kid to be entitled or spoiled, and it's very, very easy. I do this all the time thinking, when I went to college, my parents didn't give me a budget. I worked in 4 jobs in college. You know, I worked the dining hall and the caterer and the student dry cleaning services. I, you know, worked in so many jobs. But you have to sort of step back from that and not put that on kids and come up with reasonable, realistic sums. You know, I had someone who's extremely well off call me and say, you know, my kids, 2 of them are out of college and I want to start giving them some money, but I don't want to spoil them. And we talked about, well, what do you think a typical, you know, monthly rent would cost your kid? And what are you willing to pay for them? And I'm like, don't give them a small amount. Give them a good amount to actually be what they will need. And it doesn't have to be excessive, but if it's enough, and say to them, this is your money, and you have to plan for it. You have to invest it. You have to save it. And that kind of education is so important when kids have the amount and they know they have some autonomy, particularly when they're in college and beyond college.
So where do you think most people are screwing up? At what age group are they missing out, do you think?
I think the young age. I mean, what's been most fun and gratifying for me is I had actually my editor said to me, you know, after I read your book, when I first submitted it, he was going to buy a car. And he said, I would never bring she was 10 at the time, his 10-year-old to the car lot. You know, it would be a pain in the neck and she'd be bored. He's like, you know what, I made it into a little adventure. And we went to buy the car and I talked about, well, this is the price. And he's like, he wasn't sure, but he's like, you know, I'm going to tell her and then how much we're going to try to negotiate, and I'm going to need what interest rate the loan is, and then I'm going to try to see if I can get a lower loan at the bank. And he said she was fascinated. It was so much fun. And bringing your kids into, it's really those everyday life experiences. It doesn't have to be the awkward, like, where are babies from? And then you sit down, and it's a whole thing, and you're, you know, everybody gets embarrassed. And no, you just, you just use those everyday moments, whether it's a kid having a bar mitzvah or sweet 16 and they have money and you say, okay, let's think about where we're going to donate some of this money.
Mm.
All those life experiences are ones that are often related to money, and you can talk about it.
It's great advice, man. And like, again, I have to say, if you think about every part of your life, whatever relationship it is, your mm-hmm. love interest, your parents, your kids, having this open dialogue is kind of your freeing moment. It's like,
absolutely.
Oh my God. But I do want to say that we get tons and tons of calls from people and emails from our listeners, and they really are having a hard time talking to their kids about college. So after the break, I want to come back and have some of the hardest conversations that I hear about, like, my kid really wants to go to XYZ school. I don't really have the money to do it. How can I make sure the kids are being aware of how much money they could get in debt and why I want them to avoid that and try to dissuade them from ending up with tens of thousands of dollars of college loans? So I want to have an expert conversation with you, Ms. Beth Kobliner, author of How to Make Your Kid a Money Genius, Even If You're Not, about the perils of student loan debt, how we can help our kids avoid that debt, and what kinds of conversations and how early should they occur. That's what we're looking at. Stay tuned. More with Beth. It's Jill on Money. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
K, IRAs, refinancing. She covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
I can feel the dawn. I can feel.
You're back with Jill on Money, and we are delighted to welcome back to the program one of our favorite guests, Beth Kobliner. She's an award-winning personal finance writer, journalist. She's written another book, How to Make Your Kid a Money Genius, Even If You're Not. What was the first one? Get a Financial Life? Was that the one?
Get a Financial Life, Personal Finance in Your 20s and 30s.
Oh, my God. You are so prolific.
The revision is coming in about 3 weeks. So tell people not to buy. Don't buy Get a Financial Life online now. Wait 2 weeks for the new version.
Well, you know what we'll do? We'll plug it when it's graduation season. That's the time to plug that.
Yes.
Okay, let's get back to this. So, you know, we're talking a lot about helping your kids become more financially astute, how to make them money geniuses, even if you're not. And we hear so often from parents who are trying to guide their kids towards better outcomes with college.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know the average, you know, it's funny, like the average monthly payment for college loans for kids in their 20s and 30s is not that much. You hear the horror stories, but it's really like $350 a month, which is not
exactly.
I mean, it's $350 that's not going to retirement, but
yeah,
it's not the horror story of, you know, I've got a $1,200 mortgage. I mean, you know, student loan payment. But that said, how can we make sure that kids are not saddling themselves with debt? What should parents be saying to their kids? When should they start having those conversations?
So I'm so glad you asked that. First off, starting at the end of eighth grade, and people think, I don't want to stress my kid out about college, but you know something? Most of them have been hearing about it. It's in the back of their mind already. So the end of eighth grade is a good time to talk about, first off, we want you to go to college. We know people who graduate from college earn anywhere between $300,000 to $1 million more over their lifetime. So forget Mark Zuckerberg, forget Bill Gates. They dropped out of college. You have to go to college because that's – and you want to get through college in 4 years. Jill, I don't know if you know this, but half of all kids don't get through college in 4 years. They take 5 years, 6 years, and that is extremely expensive, not to mention the opportunity cost of lost income they're not getting over those years. So talk about getting it done in 4 years. I think the important thing is your kid is, you know, say next year, ninth grade counts for college. You want to get the best grades you can because that will help us probably get more money for college. We're in this together. We're going to find an affordable school for you. There's a great information on the Department of Education website. There's a calculator called FAFSA Forecaster, and that will help you figure out what do colleges expect me to pay very roughly at this point. And then you could narrow in on what schools fit into that bucket, at least to begin with. But the one thing I'd say is two-thirds of kids graduate with some form of student debt, and you should prepare your kids. I think a lot of parents say to me, I don't want my kids to have any debt. Federal student loans have low interest rates. They'll be deductible on your kids' taxes up to a certain point, a pretty generous amount. So having your kid have a little federal student loans is a good thing. It also, frankly, has been shown that if your kid is contributing to college, they have, on average, higher GPAs. They have a little skin in the game.
Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. If your kid actually contributes, they have a higher GPA. I didn't know that stat.
On average, yeah. Yeah,
that's awesome.
And it makes sense a little, right? You know, like, oh, wait a second. I'm not just here to party. I'm paying for this, and I'm going to have to pay this back. And it just makes, you know, gives you a little more awareness. Also, there's this guy, Mark Kantrowitz, who's like the college guru.
Yeah, he's funny. I've interviewed him before. He's a quirky dude.
I love him for that. Mm-hmm. He says the one rule is don't borrow more than you're likely to earn in the first year. And that's kind of an interesting rule of thumb. And I think that sounds about right, you know, just for a gut check. So if your kid thinks, you know, how much they're going to earn, you might want to make sure not to borrow more than that. And I have one more point for you, which I think you'll really find interesting, that the Ivy League, right? So we're all like aspiring for our kids to go to Ivy League schools or really, you know, prestigious schools. And Alan Krueger, who is a Princeton economist, very smart guy, mm-hmm. he did a study and found that kids who were accepted to Ivy League schools or other elite schools had salaries that were basically similar to kids who went to regular schools, good schools, but regular schools, not prestigious, super prestigious school.
Right.
When the kids started off with the same grades and the same SAT scores. So in other words, there's, I think a lot of parents feel, my kid has to go to the top school because that's going to be the place where they'll make more money and they'll have. And it really is only showing that for kids from lower income backgrounds, going to one of those really big name schools has a financial payoff.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking again on average, for kids, and you're looking just at the monetary value, it's not really there when you're talking about middle upper income kids.
That's so interesting. And by the way, are we going to like burn our Brown University degrees now? Because Beth and I both went to Brown. No, we love it.
No, we loved it. And my parents said you go to Queens College or you go to Brown or Yale, and I didn't get into Yale, so I ended up going to Brown, which was truly the best personal experience in my life, but I don't think my earning potential necessarily was better as a journalist if I went to Brown or I went to Queens College. I mean,
that's so interesting. It's a great factoid. Okay, hang on, Beth. We're keeping you for the fifth segment, which means I love you, and you know that already. You are listening to Jill on Money, and we are on the line with Beth Kobliner. Her new book is How to Make Your Kid a Money Genius. Even if you're not. So many great anecdotes, great ways to talk to your kids. It is just chock full of information that is so usable. So during the break, go order your book, and then we'll come back with the last segment, few minutes, just to finish up with Beth. It's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. And we are finishing up our interview with Beth Kobliner, author of How to Make Your Kid a Money Genius, Even If You're Not. Beth, do you actually hear me talking when we're in break?
No.
Oh, thank God.
Because
I just, yeah, no, because I, not nothing about you, but I just said, I just dropped a whole bunch of bad language talking to Mark, not about you, about someone totally unrelated. And then I'm like, oh my God, I hope she doesn't think I'm talking about her. So that's
that would be very upsetting.
I had a panic-stricken moment, you know, in that.
No.
Okay. Beth, before we finish up, we just got a couple of minutes left in the program. Talk a little bit about the conversations that you need to have with your kid after college also. Mm-hmm. Because I know you spent a ton of time about emphasizing before the age of seven.
Yeah.
But these conversations about money don't seem to stop at college or at graduation. What's important for parents to stress as kids are graduating?
Steer them toward repayment loan options. Don't pay off their student loans for them. I mean, unless you're just so loaded that it doesn't affect your own retirement. But otherwise, help them, steer them to the repayment options. And I go through all the different options in the book. But also talk to them about, you know what, you got that job. You put the most you can into that 401k, at least up to matching. You know, you want to set the groundwork straight. If they're moving back home, and let's say 40% of them are now, it's unbelievable, then say to them, great, you're moving back home. If you feel like it's great, moving back home, but you're going to either pay a little bit of rent, we're going to make sure you have health insurance, because if you get into trouble, that means the whole family is going to get into financial trouble when it comes to big medical bills. And tell them, you know, this is an opportunity. This isn't the time to, like, woo, live it up because your parents are paying for your food. This is the time to save up money, so you can get a place of your own.
I love that. Get those kids out of there. Beth Koblinor, author of How to Make Your Kid a Money Genius, Even If You're Not. Thank you so much for joining us. Hey, if you missed any part of this interview, go to JillOnMoney.com, and you can hear the whole thing. Beth is such a great writer. Go out and get her book. And thank you for listening. This is Jill on Money. We'll see you next week. If you've got a call before then, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. See you next week. Thanks for listening.